Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the new screensavers is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. The new screensavers is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage brings the mortgage process into the 21st century with a fast, easy, and completely online process. Check out Rocket Mortgage today at quickenloans.com/NSS. And by Blue Apron. Blue Apron will send you fresh, high-quality ingredients to cook delicious meals with simple step-by-step instructions right to your door. See what's on the menu this week and get your first three meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/twit. That's blueapron.com/twit. And by the Ring Video Doorbell. With Ring, you can see and talk to anyone at your door from anywhere in the world using your smartphone. It's like caller ID for your home. Go to ring.com/NSS and get up to $150 off a Ring of Security kit with their limited time offer.
It's raining emoji, kicking the tires on the PS4 Pro, and Facebook said you are dead. Live from the Twit Eastside Studios in beautiful Petaluma, it's the new Screensavers.
Thank you, Roberto, who came all the way from New York City just to read that and made his own Screensavers T-shirt.
That's class act.
Ian Thompson, great. Speaking of class acts, he's got the poncy British accent and everything. Always great to see you from the register.co.uk. I'm Leo Laporte.
Yeah.
What?
Poncy. We used to own this country, damn it.
You know what? I've been watching, and I know you haven't seen it yet, The Crown, which is a Netflix original. I have a feeling BBC did it first and Netflix bought it. But anyway, because it's really elaborate. It's like Downton Abbey, only it's the real queen and the real
it's
king.
Like $130 million budget, they were saying.
What?
Yeah.
Well, I believe it. They actually built a replica, a life-size replica of Buckingham Palace. It's incredible. No, I don't think
I was
so.
Say,
but it does look just like they're using the real. Anyway, it's great. Did you know King George VI? You probably didn't.
It wasn't a really good friend of his. No, I mean, we're more sort of casual acquaintances.
So, I guess this was the thing to do. He had to have an operation. He had lung cancer. Mm-hmm. They did it in the palace.
Yeah.
What? Yeah, of course.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds counterintuitive, but where else was he going to go?
The hospital.
Yes, but back then, you know.
Do the royals go to hospital now, or do they do everything?
Oh, no, they go to hospital now, okay. But back then.
They embalmed him in the palace.
And back then, a lot of people were treated for serious operations in their own homes. There
weren't
enough hospital beds to go around. You had to pay
to use
them. Which, in this case, though, it was just like, get us a sterile room.
That's Prince Philip. There's George VI. I have to say, I'm really enjoying this. But you're telling me, as a British citizen, a subject of the Queen, that it's not that accurate.
They take enormous liberties to an extent. I mean, certainly, it's one of those things, it touches the truth in about five different places.
$130 million. There's John Lithgow as Winston Churchill.
I know.
He's good.
Yeah.
We will fight him on the beaches. He did the whole thing. It was great. It was wonderful.
I did love when Tony Blair got elected Prime Minister. He sort of bounced in to see the Queen and accept her commissions from the government. Full of himself, very full of himself. And she just said, yes, you're my, I think it's 27th Prime Minister since Winston. And it was just like, okay, right. So in your place, smiling boy.
In your place. We're going to have fun today. We have Jeremy Bruce here. He is the chief emoji officer at a site I love called Emojipedia. But he was in town for the Unicode Consortium. Unicode is the replacement to ASCII, the 256-bit description of letters on computers, and among those letters are some emoji.
Yeah.
So we're going to talk about the new emoji. They've approved, how many, 51? 51 new emoji. And
what a world we live in, though, that you can become chief emoji officer. I mean, it's just young children
emoji
sitting there. If you study hard and do your homework, you can be a chief emoji officer one day, too. It's just, things have got a bit weird.
Actually, you're gonna love Jeremy. And
he's a top bloke.
What's cool is, if you think about it, emoji is the way a whole generation likes to communicate with emoji as well as some letters, but it's an important part of messaging.
It is. Right? I mean, I've seen some people on Tinder actually get a date just using emojis.
All right, maybe Jeremy could show us how to do that. Because the emojis are G-rated. Yeah. They don't have any sexy emojis. But people have found surrogates.
Yes.
For the sexy emojis.
The aubergine.
The aubergine.
Yes.
I don't know what that is, but it sounds sexy.
What do you call something
It's an eggplant.
Oh, eggplant. That's what you call them over here. Right. Okay.
Hey, look at this. Speaking of sexy, it's got three blades, not two. This is, if you're a PlayStation fan, you recognize immediately the PlayStation Pro.
Yeah.
The new 4K PS4.
And that looks like something you'd be happy having in your living room.
This could be a great office building in Amsterdam, I think. but in fact, it is...
Very small workers.
Yeah. It is very powerful, but we're going to see if this upgrade to the PlayStation 4 is worth your money. In other words, my big question, and Brian Burnett, who did the review, will answer it for us, if you already have a PlayStation 4, should you get the Pro? If you need some help with your Google Home, Jason Howells has some tips. And we're going to get somebody in the chat room knows how to listen to us on Google Home.
Right.
So I'm going to find that out because I want to be able to tell you how to do that. Full page pop-ups on your Android. We have a solution. Mm-hmm. And Megan Maroney with 5 hidden features in iOS 10. Did anything happen this week? Was there any news this week at all? Well, I think we could just skip ahead.
Well, you're not going to shut up about the Brexit vote for a start because... America played its Trump card and got silliest vote of the year award.
I like that Trump card. Brexit upset you quite a bit. I remember.
Yes,
when it happened.
I was on with you and Jason Calacanis on Twit in June, just after it happened.
That's right.
And made a rather unfortunate prediction, which unfortunately came true.
That it would happen here too.
Yeah.
Do you think, as a British person who understands the Brexit vote, I imagine better than I do. That there is a relationship between the election of President-elect Trump and the Brexit vote?
Oh, I think they're two manifestations of something which are very much part of the same thing.
Did you have a Facebook problem in Britain, too? Because Facebook caused this. I bet you did have the problem that we're having here, which is everybody's looking for somebody to blame, right?
Right.
And one of the people getting a surprisingly large amount of blame is Facebook right now for the fake news.
Yes.
I didn't see any fake news on Facebook.
Oh, it was drowned out.
Okay.
I mean, this was when Facebook announced they wanted to be the newspaper for the world. One of the very first questions we asked in the press conference was like, well, fine, newspapers print stuff, but they're also responsible for what they print.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, no, we're not a media organization, we're a technology company.
So Facebook
company.
Goes back and forth. Are we a media company?
Yeah.
Are we a social network? In my opinion, it would behoove them to say we are not a media company, because then you do have responsibility for the content posted there. And if you think about it, I always see Facebook as a conduit for you and me to post whatever we want. If it's spurious, who cares? That's what I want to post. It's not Facebook's obligation to say, oh, this is crazy. I don't want them doing that. It's not a newspaper. And furthermore, I think the most important thing is we've got to teach our kids, we've got to teach ourselves how to vet stuff on the internet. Because even if Facebook did for somehow say, oh, this is crazy news, this is fake news, it would still be all over the place anyway.
Yeah, it's always going to be there, so we've got to teach critical reasoning skills again that we used to in schools.
Yeah.
I mean, my old history teacher, when I was doing my history A-levels, which is 16 to 18, very first lesson, he said, when you're when you're looking at a historical document, you've got to think about three things. Who wrote it, why they wrote it, and who paid for it.
Perfect.
You know, if you actually go through that mental process.
Those are three great, everything you see on the internet. Who wrote it, why did they wrote it, and who paid for it.
Exactly.
Get that question answered to your satisfaction. I think that's a very good metric.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of people looking to find something to blame, and Facebook
that's what's happened.
Has a certain amount, I mean... I think it had a tiny effect on the election, but I do think that if Mark Zuckerberg can honestly say it had nothing at all to do with it,
well, he says you're crazy if you think that fake news.
Yeah, but at the same time, he's also saying come to Facebook to advertise because we know exactly how to reach people and influence people that way. So he can say it's crazy all his life.
He said people's life experience is what led them to vote. I agree with you in this case that's Mark. as he often does, philosophizing instead of responding.
Yeah.
So Mark's, you know, whenever there's a criticism of Facebook, he just goes on and on about how we're just connecting people, we're connecting the world. That's all we're doing. But I think he's right to say we can't take responsibility for the content on Facebook. It's an impossible task. It's also going to...
I mean, Google's come up with
well,
a...
Do they?
Google is coming up with a checking tool so that you can check...
That's different. That's Google News, which is a news site, and then but it's
sorry,
only
Facebook
on Google News.
Can't say we want to be
They
the
shouldn't
news.
Do it in the search results, should they?
I think they're actually applying that, aren't they?
I think it was in Google News only.
I
would hate to see it in the search results. Like, you could go to this site, but it's wrong. That's not their job. That's not their job. And then similarly, I don't think it's Mark Zuckerberg's job to say this news story is real or this news story is not real.
I think
if it's demonstrably phony.
If they're putting it in the news feed based on their algorithm, then they should have to base some other measure.
Should like a little Snopes link.
Obviously, you're never going to stop people from posting fake news.
Before there was Facebook, I got this in my email every day.
But if you that little box in the top right-hand side, if they're going to put that in as this is news, these are news articles,
well, they should take that out. They should get rid of that trending stories thing. But do you think that my internet service provider or email provider had a responsibility when I got an email that was bogus to say this is bogus? No.
No, of course not.
Because they're a common carrier.
If you are, I've been a professional journalist for 25 years, if you are setting yourself up to say this is the news in that little box, then you've got to check it and make sure it is news.
That's fair.
And not rely on an AI engine to do it because it patently can't.
But they got in trouble when they had humans doing it.
They got in trouble because they were bad at it. You know, it's like... And when
so you're going to do it, be good at it.
You know, it's like we have professional editors at the Reg who will sit down and say, right, that's libelous, that's wrong, go away and fix it. No, if you don't, I'm going to smack you around the side of the head. Obviously, they don't really do that. Please don't kill me.
But I imagine, for instance, if somebody passed away, or didn't pass away, but there was, but everybody... There were stories everywhere that they had that Facebook would not. I mean, that's another. Let's take it out of the political realm.
Yeah.
Oh, wait a minute. Everybody's dead on Facebook. Did this happen to you? Because it didn't happen to me.
No, I was really annoyed.
I wanted it to.
I logged in. I was just like, come on, tell them. Remembering
Mark Zuckerberg. We hope people who love Mark will find comfort in the things others share to remember and celebrate his life. Now, first of all, the funny thing is that's the line they use on everybody's page.
Yeah.
So it's not exactly
really sincere. You know?
And apparently somebody flipped a switch at Facebook that memorialized everybody.
Yeah.
You just had to get on in the right time to
see it. Exactly, exactly. This is what we think happening. The first one that first pops up, we were talking about it in the office, and it was like, I wonder if, because everyone's sending each other condolence emails on Facebook about the election, whether that triggered something.
Do you think it was algorithmic?
It's an enormous cocker, whatever it is, because it came at just the wrong time.
It could be a terrible shock, right? I'm not dead. Am I dead? Anyway, this is actually something people should know about. It is a feature of Facebook. If your loved ones contact Facebook and say, hey, Leo's passed, he's dead, he's a dead parrot, then they won't delete your page, that you can memorialize it, which I think is a great thing.
Yeah,
I and it becomes a memorial to you.
The one thing I do wish is they take the birthday notifications off after you're dead.
Happy birthday, you dead person.
You know, my mentor was a guy called Guy Cuny in the UK, and I continually get messages saying on his birthday, just like, why don't you tell Guy Cuny happy birthday? It's because he died over 5 years ago. Thanks for reminding
that
me.
That should
Facebook.
Be taken up, but that's because Guy's friends and family didn't memorialize him. So
well,
if you go
function,
to
then.
Facebook and you go to your settings, under security settings, there's a legacy contact. Your legacy contact is someone you choose to manage your account after you pass away. They'll be able to see, do things like pin a post on your timeline, respond to new friend requests, and update your profile picture. They won't post as you, which is probably a good idea, or see private messages. And you can also give that person the option to download and archive. And once a year, you get an annual notification. I think this is a good thing.
You can also set it, I believe, so that it just removes your entire profile.
That's right. If you don't want a Facebook account after you pass away, you can request to have your account permanently deleted instead of choosing a legacy contact.
Yeah.
So everybody should go in there and set that, right? Although, if you had set that, and then Facebook accidentally made you dead, would you have lost your account?
That's a good point.
I never heard of that happening to anybody, so maybe that's...
It's a relatively new addition to the thing, though, so maybe a lot of people didn't have it activated.
It's in your Facebook settings under security. Go look and establish a legacy contact. Hope you don't mind I've made you my legacy contact. I made my wife my legacy contact.
Some real power.
and I thought we'd ask you this since you did cover Brexit. And I know you, in your role as the American correspondent for the Register, register.co.uk, probably spoke to people in Silicon Valley about the election.
A lot of time on the phone.
What was the reaction to the election in Silicon Valley?
Initially, shock. Because nobody was expecting this. It was just completely
just
out
like
of
Brexit,
the blue.
Right? It was like, wow.
Yeah. I mean, same as Brexit. But then it started to kick in, and there's a lot of very nervous people at Amazon.
Why Amazon?
Trump has promised Amazon antitrust action if he became president.
See, it's a mixed bag. He also promised that he would stop the Time Warner.
Yeah.
Who was it? I forgot. Verizon? Who was it?
Charter.
Comcast.
Comcast.
No. I've already forgotten. It's good because he's going to cancel it. So it's a mixed bag. He's been gone back and forth on H-1B visas. These are the visas that Silicon Valley wants that allow...
I actually think he's right on this one because there's a lot of companies abusing the H-1B system.
Oh, I think about Disney. What Disney did was criminal. But, I mean, they brought in workers. The H-1B visa allows you to bring in skilled workers from overseas to fill jobs that cannot be filled in the United States. Silicon Valley says there are not enough skilled workers in the U.S. to fill these positions. So here's what Disney did, using a loophole, basically. They brought in a bunch of workers from overseas, had the IT professionals at Disney train them to take their job, and then... Bye-bye, and they got
shameful
severance. And so it is shameful. And so one of the things President-elect Trump says he'll do is raise the wage for H-1B workers, make a minimum wage that's high enough so they don't displace American workers. Because that's one problem, is they're cheaper, right?
Yeah, I mean, the whole system needs a fundamental reform because at the moment there are four tech skill levels that you need to get an H-1B visa, ranging from knows what a computer is to really high-end data scientists.
Should be only high-skilled, right?
Yeah, well, 80% of the H-1B visas which are issued are to the first two grades. That's his
taking
job.
American jobs.
Yeah, this is basically a job that anybody could do. And there are a couple of companies, well, I think about four companies that take up the vast majority. So companies like Wipro, for example, staff most of their workforce.
Right. That's where Disney, H-1B. I think, got their...
Microsoft is a huge user of the H-1B program.
Yeah.
And, you know, they say, oh, we don't have enough staff, you know. But the fact is, if you get an H-1B worker in, they find it very difficult to complain if they're overworked. They can't really, in fact, complain at all because the company can just say, right, you're obviously not suited to this company. You've now got 2 weeks to upend your life and go home.
Yeah.
And it's
another thing
President-elect
Trump suggested with the H-1B... What's interesting, there's no policy statement on his website in this regard, so we have to trust interviews, and some of they're kind of
Sometimes he can contradict himself in the same sentence. Yeah. So, I mean, it's just
we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah.
But one of the things I'm trying to remember, so he wanted to raise the minimum wage. I don't think he wants to eliminate them, although this is part of that immigration general immigration policy. The other thing he talked about, which I think Apple's very happy about, is repatriating American money held overseas.
That actually is in his manifesto, which is to...
A 10% income tax on that.
Yeah, which is exactly what George W. Bush did in, I think it was 2003.
Is it an amnesty? It's kind of an amnesty.
Back then it was a one-off amnesty, and I think now he's just saying it'll be a flat 10% rate.
Tim Cook has said that he would welcome this. They want the money back. And, of course, it would be good for America because there's trillions of dollars in Ireland and other countries that Google, Microsoft, Apple, Facebook have stashed away overseas legally, but change that tax code and then get them to repatriate. They would have to pay a 10% additional tax on it, which in most cases would still be less than the corporate tax would have been.
Exactly.
But that's trillions of dollars would then be used by those companies one hopes to invest in
America. This is just the thing. Last time this was done, which was a temporary tax holiday that the Bush administration organized, subsequent research has shown that it wasn't used. It was done primarily for share buybacks to keep the price high and return to investors. Dell built one small factory, but companies like Apple and Microsoft just gave it straight to shareholders. There were no extra investments. And the same thing is going to happen here.
Well, or they maybe acquire companies, but all that does is make some guy who's running a unicorn filthy rich and doesn't really trickle down necessarily.
But also, I mean, there's the Trump also said that he wanted to force companies like Apple to make their iPhones back in the US.
Right.
Never going to happen. Absolutely never going to happen. So, you know,
it's a mixed bag, isn't it?
It's a very mixed bag. But as I say, Jeff Bezos is sweating it at the moment because his newspaper, The Washington Post, came in very hard investigating. Well,
and
Trump.
it would frankly look like candidate Trump was repaying Bezos.
Mm-hmm.
Now that he's president-elect,
I don't think he's got a problem doing that. You know, I mean, I don't think he's got a problem doing that.
So I understand the nervousness, and it's just unknown. We don't know what's going to happen.
Peter Thiel's reputation has...
Well, that's one good thing. We've got a representative. Peter Thiel has now been tapped to be on the transition team. He's the Silicon Valley venture capitalist who put the first investment of money, not a huge amount, I think $500,000, into Facebook. He quite notoriously gave the Trump campaign $1.25 million. Mm-hmm. At the time, and I didn't support this at all, but at the time, there was a call for his ouster at Y Combinator from the board there and of Facebook.
A number of companies have stopped working with Y Combinator as a result.
That's their privilege, but I don't think a company should ever be allowed to oust somebody because they supported a candidate from a major, maybe the KKK, but from a major political party. That's got to be his right. Anyway, he's going to be on the transition team. One hopes he would also speak for Silicon Valley.
He only speaks for himself. It's as simple as that.
He's not well loved in Silicon Valley.
I shouldn't be too critical because otherwise he might sue us all into a smoking hole in the ground.
as he did with Valley Bag.
Yeah, but yes, he's only on the lookout for himself.
Yeah.
So,
well, time will tell. It'll be very interesting. It's going to be an interesting few years, I think. All right, we're going to get back to the show in just a second. Jason Howell will show us his Google Home. But first, I want to mention our fine sponsor, Rocket Mortgage. If you are borrowing money to buy a home or borrowing money with a refi, and you're watching this show, I can imagine like the first thing in your mind, one of them is, where do I go so I don't have to bring in a box of papers, go through papers in my attic? Where can I do this all online? Where is there going to be a system where it uses the information it gets from me to give me the best loan, to find the best price? And this is QuickenLoans.com. They've called it Rocket Mortgage because it is 100% online. It brings the mortgage process finally into the 21st century. They've taken all the complicated, time-consuming parts out of applying for mortgage. It literally just takes a few minutes. You don't have to search through stacks of old files and paperwork. You can share your bank statements and pay stubs with the touch of a button. You don't even need to sit down at the computer. You can do it on your phone. In fact, they've got a great video of a couple looking at an open house saying, hey, you know, we really should buy this house, but we don't have a loan. Hey, I'll just do Rocket Mortgage. She does it on her phone, shows the realtor, you're approved. She's ready to go. It's a quick online process you can manage from the convenience of your couch or at an open house. Now, if you're looking to refinance or buy a home, go to quickenloans.com/NSS. quickenloans.com/NSS. NSS is for new screensavers. That way they know you saw it on the show. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLSconsumerAccess.org, number 3030. We thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Last week, we showed you the new Google Home. We had a kind of fun face-off that was fun. Have you gotten one yet?
We're testing ours out now at the moment.
I kind of like it.
I've given it to... Well, Kieran McCarthy at the firm has it. He is willing to have these devices in his house. It'll be a... Satan will go to work on a snowplow before that thing ends up in my bedroom, but still.
Is that privacy that concerns you?
Yes, absolutely.
That it's always listening.
It's always listening. And to be honest, I'm perfectly capable of putting my own music on, thank you, or turning the lights on and off myself. So I don't feel the need for a tech solution to that, particularly as the security is so lousy on so many of these devices.
Lisa and I have both Amazon Echoes and Google Homes, and I don't care. You can listen all you want. If you enjoy it, knock yourself out. Anyway, one thing that's key to seeing whether this is a useful product is kind of getting to know how to use it. Jason Howell, who is the host of All About Android and loves all things Google, has some tips and tricks for you for your Google Home watch.
Hey, so I got my Google Home probably about 3 or 4 days ago. Me and my family have been living with it in our kitchen. We've been having a great time with it. It does some really cool, unique things. It also does some very strange things. So I'm going to go through some things that have helped me and some things that have just given me a little bit of a laugh. First of all, I say, hey, Google. I don't say, okay, Google, because if I say, okay, Google, as you can see right here, my phone just woke up. That's going to send the command over to there, which is fine most of the time. But saying, hey, Google, is going to send it right over to Google Home. So Leo taught me this one. It's really cool. Hey, Google, set a timer for 1 minute for bacon.
Okay, a 1 minute timer called bacon. And here we go.
And then once that kicks off, once it's actually done and ringing, I can say, hey, Google, what is this timer? And it'll tell me that it's the bacon timer, and I know to take the bacon out, even though other timers are going. Really nice in the kitchen. Another one that I use all the time is that I use this for podcast listening. So, hey, Google, play Tech News Today.
Here's the latest news from Tech News Today at 3:55 p.m. yesterday.
Spectacles for your
And if I want to skip forward, all I say is, hey, Google, skip ahead 10 minutes.
There are people who are, like, very disappointed.
Hey, Google, stop. And that puts me right into the middle of the podcast, which I find very useful. It also has some other features that are baked in as a result of integration with If This. Hey, Google, what timer is this?
That's your timer called Bacon.
Another cool feature about Google Home is that there's If This Then That integration, which really opens the playing field for all of these other things that you can do. For instance, hey, Google, find my phone.
Okay, calling your phone.
If I've lost my phone around the house and I can't find it, this is one way to make sure that Google Home can actually send me a call and I can find my phone with the ringer on. Another If This Then That integration is tweeting or updating your Facebook profile. I can say, hey, Google, tweet, this was sent from my Google Home.
Okay, going to tweet, this was sent from my Google Home.
And then I could check my feed a little bit later and I'll find that posted there. But there's a whole bunch of other things like adding a person to contacts. You can control your TV set. There's a party mode for Hue lights that will turn your Hue lights into all sorts of colors. Nest thermostat controls, of course. But then there's some really fun things here. Check these out. Hey, Google, I'm feeling lucky.
Welcome to Are You Feeling Lucky? Prepare to enter the chamber of random trivia questions.
How about this? Hey, Google, play Mad Libs.
This is Mad Libs, the world's greatest word game. I'll help you fill in the blanks. Put on your thinking cap. First up, tell me an adjective.
Round.
Okay.
And finally, if you just want a little bit of random, you know, pieces of information here and there, all you have to say is, hey, Google, surprise me.
This fact might surprise you. According to the BBC, cheetahs can accelerate to 70 miles per hour in only 3 seconds.
Wow.
That's faster than most sports cars.
I am surprised. Every once in a while you get those little extra sound effects too, which kind of make the experience just a little bit more dynamic. Google Home is a lot of fun. You can learn a lot. You can control a lot. I have a feeling it's going to open up a lot more over time though. So it's pretty early days right now. I'm really happy that I have one in my kitchen. You can catch all the work that I do on the Twit Network. I do Tech News Today, all about Android, Android App Arena, and a whole lot more.
Thank you, Jason Howell. And I've been told, although I haven't tried it, maybe I could try it from here. If you want to listen to... us, the live feed, he showed you how you could listen to podcasts, but you could say, hey, Google, listen to Twit Live. It's working.
My goodness.
Wow. That's okay. Hey, Google, shut up! Let's see if that works. It did. Okay. So it is something about being able to shout at your house every once in a while. That's kind of fun. Hey, look who's here. Jeremy Burge. Good to see you again, Jeremy.
Good to see you,
He showed up spontaneously on Sunday on Twit.
Here I am.
And it was so great to see you. You were in town for what?
The Unicode Technical Committee meeting.
It's what?
The quarterly meeting where we approve the new emoji list.
So this is not the... only job of the Unicode consortium, right?
Right. They've been around for a long time. They standardize all text, all the characters. They're kind of the fundamentals of text on the computer.
It's followed ASCII, right?
Yeah,
ASCII was 250. It was 125 characters or whatever, 128 characters.
And yet people still manage to do ASCII art and ASCII some rather...
But there's more than just the Western alphabet out there. There's many other alphabets. And so it was felt that if you have... how is it 16-bit, 32-bit? How long is the Unicode?
16-bit.
16-bit. So that means there's, what, 65,000?
Yeah, and there's...
Is it signed or unsigned?
I don't know.
So there's either 32,000 or 65,000 different characters, which is enough for every language. And there's a little leftover for emojis. How many emojis are there?
It's a kind of a trick question because there's different ways of classifying them, but it's about 2,000.
So there's some glyphs, there's some weird-looking things that
aren't... Well, you got the new emojis that have you approve one code point, but then it has five different skin tones.
Oh, I see.
So that's two characters approved, but you get five or six different images.
Now, for an old fart like myself, would the standard colon bracket be considered an emoji?
No.
That's a happy face. Okay.
Normally, I guess an emoticon, in a way that it's sort of actually by chance that emoji doesn't really have anything to do with the word emoticon. Right. It's just Japanese. It just happens to sound similar, so it's sort of caught on.
When the Japanese created emoji, were they inspired by emoticon? They must have been.
Yeah, I mean, they must have been.
Happy faces.
You know what? The original set from Japan only had about four faces. It was mostly
food and dancing and fireworks.
The phases of the moon, right. All the important stuff.
Well, we've expanded it now. In fact, your committee went through all the... How many suggestions did you have?
You get a lot of suggestions come in. Yeah, I mean, there's hundreds, and some of them have maybe 50 in a proposal. There was someone that proposed 24 dinosaurs in one proposal.
You know, one's enough. Yeah, you can represent.
I just have this image of you sitting there with a bottle of wine apiece, just like, okay, no, that's rubbish. Oh, yeah, we can maybe do that
now,
one.
Is there a separate emoji committee that does this, or is it the Unicode Consortium as a whole that does it? Or
yeah, so Unicode has subcommittees for each topic. Otherwise, it would be crazy. Not everybody cares about emoji, so there's a emoji committee, and we pass through new proposals. And
in fact, you told me there's people in the consortium who think that emojis get too much attention. This is not all we do here.
Right. And they get a hugely disproportionate amount of media attention.
Sure.
At the meeting, to be honest, the majority of characters approved have nothing to do with emoji, but nobody cares.
This is, I'll confess, the first time we've ever had anybody on at all from the Unicode folks. So you're right. This is all about emojis
and
for
it's,
us.
Yeah, it's got to be. If someone approves a Tibetan character set, people care about it, but not the rest of the people that don't care about that.
So how big is the committee?
So the technical committee meeting is made up of Apple and Google and Microsoft and Twitter, all the major tech companies.
Okay. Everybody who does emoji.
Yeah, everybody that does emoji and more. Anyone that does text. Adobe is big on the...
And the go ahead.
And some companies have actually built this into their inclusivity strategies, where it's like we've actively been supporting
multiracial,
having more women engineer emojis and that sort of thing.
Right.
So, you know.
I think Google was the company that really wanted female occupations. Right,
that was a big press from Google. They had a proposal in June of this year, and they said, look, we really want women to be better represented, especially jobs that women have in healthcare as well, and science.
Right on.
And, yeah, so they sort of said, here's what we want. And,
so there's discussion, in the committee. Is it heated?
You know what? The most heated discussions are about just really technical points about, you know,
it's engineers,
which block
of
in
course.
The code, you know, where which part of the code block it goes in and that sort of thing. The rest of it, there's already criteria that are set out to say it has to be distinct. It has to maybe fill a gap in the standard and prove that people will use it. So
and, be tasteful and, as well.
Tasteful? Multicultural too, right? Because emojis are global.
Right.
So some of the emojis are so... Western, for instance, we were talking about the farmer emoji, which is somebody with a straw hat and a carrot, and that's a Western farmer, not an Asian farmer,
And Unicode doesn't dictate what they look like. They put a sample image up, which can have some sway. In the end, it's up to a company. So if you were, for instance, Samsung, based in Asia, in Korea, you might make your farmer look completely different to what
make Google a rice farmer instead of a carrot.
Unicode's really strict about saying we don't. You can make it look like what you want it to look like. This is what it's meant to be.
Is there an emoji crisis? By which I mean, are we going to run out? Are we going to run out of emoji? I mean, how you only have 65,000 possible. How much room for emojis?
I think
we've
got space. We've got space.
Okay.
But the real issue is on fonts and RAM on keyboards that these images, they're high res. And if you put the Apple emoji fonts over 100 meg now, and if you think 100 megabytes, not a big deal, but on a phone in RAM all the time.
That's a lot.
I mean, they're high resolution images. So
how many emojis are there now?
The images on iOS, there's about 2,000 if you count all the skin tones.
There's a lot. Yeah, and then you've just added 51 new ones.
51 new ones.
So let's take a look. These are the just approved. This is hot off the emoji presses. By the way, thanks to Throwboy for these emoji pillows,
He does such a great job.
We left out the... Now, I'm kind of impressed because I thought it was poo, But it turns out it's frozen yogurt.
It is not frozen yogurt. It is, definitively poo.
All right, you heard it here from the Emoji Master. By the way, Jeremy Burge is the founder of Emojipedia, so he's the chief emoji officer for us. So it's poo. In fact, they did address this.
Yes.
In this meeting.
Brand new document updating the sample, the chart image to say this is how it should look. The old Unicode chart image had a poo with flies around it. That's out. We've got eyes. Eyes, no flies.
Eyes, no flies. It's the slogan of this year's Emoji Consortium.
I've got to I do wonder if some of the people in these meetings are sitting there, I can't believe I studied computing for so long.
18 and now years I'm doing of computer science.
I couldn't possibly comment whether anyone thinks that at all.
So show us some of the new emojis.
Some new stuff. What have we got?
You know, from a purely cultural point of view, there's a hijab, right?
There is.
Which is the Muslim headdress. Mm-hmm. I think that's great.
Right.
And then there's a crazy guy with a beard.
There's the bearded man. We've got the milkshake emoji.
Tanya really lobbying for that one. But is it a milkshake? It could be a root beer float. It could be a Diet Pepsi. We don't know.
It's called Cup with Straw.
It's called Cup with Straw. What is the one to the right of Cup with Straw? That's weird looking.
That is a breastfeeding person. There is no head in an attempt to make it sort of gender inclusive, but it will probably get a female-ish looking head on there by the time it hits.
I think it would help in the legibility, because otherwise it looks like, I don't know, a blob.
Right. Noble goals sometimes don't result in legible.
Well, it's images. Also kind of creepy to have a headless person breastfeeding.
Right.
Well, unless you're around a guillotine, but yes.
You know. I hear after your head's chopped off, you continue to breastfeed for several minutes. Did you hear that? There's the shh. But that, now you told me shh. That gesture isn't shh. Because it's culturally...
Well, it can mean different. We're not defining what you use it for. It's not called the shh face. It's called our face with index finger in front of mouth.
In most cultures, does that mean hush?
It generally means hush, But if you want to use it for anything else, there's no... Unicode's not prescriptive about how you use an emoji.
It could be up your nose with a rubber hose. We don't know. It could be anything.
Pie. People are fans of pie. They've got the savory pies in Australia, where I'm from, or sweet pies up here.
You also have the pie floater, so, you know.
Yeah.
Flying saucer. And I see a Dracula. Are we going to have some sci-fi?
There's a whole bunch of sci-fi. There's a mage, so that's a wizard or a witch. There's a mer-person, which is mermaid or merman. The vampire. I'm not sure if werewolf made it. There was a werewolf on one of the fantasy proposal
lists. So hard to keep track.
Dinosaurs. Two dinosaurs. I know.
You got two.
I know.
Broccoli.
I said those,
okay.
Is that a bowling ball side in half or a coconut?
A coconut. Okay. Although those three dots are a bit suspicious, aren't they?
Sandwich. There's the two dinosaurs. You've got a raptor. Oh, you know, you need a meat eater and a vegetarian.
Yeah. Pretty much.
One of each. Yeah.
So it's a T-Rex and a, what they call a sauropod.
Meditating young lady. A rock climber.
Yeah.
Now, why do the images look so different? That rock climber is pretty primitive.
Yeah, these are from the proposals, so it's still up to vendors next year. They'll still make their own images.
In fact, there's some controversy over iOS 10's emojis being too photorealistic.
Yeah, big update. iOS 10.2, it's in beta at the moment, and...
They look good, I think.
Hyper-realistic, which is, they look nice on a Retina screen. The old ones were kind of blurry. Some of them had been done 10 years ago, which were on tiny screens, and they didn't zoom up very well. I think they look great. Some people are mad about it, though.
Speaking of mad, what were the emojis that didn't get approved?
Oh, this year, what didn't get approved? There was one for leafy green didn't get approved.
Leafy green, yeah. I can guess. Certainly Californians would be very behind.
That was more of an Asian one, actually.
There's a nauseated face now. It's a green one with kind of vomit coming out.
Yep, that got approved.
Drooling face.
This is some of this year's list. This is an iOS 10.2.
Oh, this is not the vomiting one. There's another one with vomit.
Two. Last year we approved the last. Set we approved nauseated face. This set has vomiting face.
Oh my goodness.
A lot of people during the election results are very excited about vomiting face coming around.
Let's see, what else?
So this is the list that's been approved coming to 10.2.
This is last year's list.
Jumped over to iOS now. Fingers crossed, will be very big on iOS. Facepalm, all from last year's list.
I think it's great to have more. Variety of emojis. The problem is finding the emoji that's right for you.
What do you think, Ian? big emoji user.
I know. I'm kind of torn because I would like to be terribly polite. No, over my dead body. No, it just, I'm sorry. I tried one on Twitter once because I was drunk and it just like...
What was it? Which one did you use?
It was the crying face and it was just...
They have a lot of distressed emojis.
They're
the nauseated and the vomiting. And now there's an emoji that's a like swearing emoji with a bar and like expletives across
them. Yep. But you can make a progression.
I'm a writer. This is what you use words for.
If God didn't want us to use words, he wouldn't have invented the English language. I'm saying that exactly. I like emoji.
Sometimes a symbol is more expressive. You know, I even feel guilty using an emoticon. I certainly wouldn't use it in an official email, but I mean, an emoji, I think I need to be younger.
Say twice as much in a tweet.
I will argue that there's actually a very legitimate reason to have initially emoticons and now emojis, which is that a lot of times in the written word, nuance is lost.
Yes.
If you're being sarcastic, I can hear it in your tone
sarcasm
of voice.
Sarcasm on email doesn't come across.
But it doesn't come across in print.
Well, yeah.
So emojis are, in a way, more expressive than language. They can tell somebody how you feel as you write this sentence. And so I think that they have a real place in communication.
I think you're right. I just think I'm kind of behind the times on this one. I'm terribly sorry.
Are there any other emojis that you think we should point out that are new for the 51 is a lot. Wow.
Yeah, it is a lot. Personally, I like the stars on the eyes. I think that's a nice one to have.
Hey there, you with the stars in your
sort of
eyes.
Like, wow. You know, to be honest, you said there's way more frowny ones at the moment than happy
ones. Yeah, let's get some happy emojis. Look at that starry one.
So not all these got approved, but this is a proposal for a bunch of new faces. And a few of these got on the list. You can see the expletive up there, the swearing one. That one is on the list. That's approved.
Okay.
Shocked face with exploding head. I'm thinking that did not get in.
No, that is in.
Oh, my God. Mind blown.
Yep. So that's going to be popular. And the number one, since we published the list, giraffe is still getting the
giraffe.
Most
attention.
Yeah.
What do people use a giraffe emoji for? I'm a bit,
you know what, I'm really wondering what happened. There was another, inexplicably a year ago, a lot of people were saying they wanted a potato emoji, and it got approved, and no one really uses it.
Yeah. And this is one thing that's great about Emojipedia. You can know which are the most popular, which one are used. They've got trending emojis.
Yeah.
For a while, there was an emoji site that was using Twitter as input, and Twitter cut them off.
Yeah.
I was very disappointed.
They made it back. Emoji Tracker. It's
emoji
a great site.
Back?
They got put back in. There it is. It's live on the air.
Oh, good. So what is number one right now? An emoji. When it goes green, somebody's using that emoji on Twitter.
That would be the face with tears of joy.
Actually, the one that's the least used is the one that always interests me. And usually, it's like the guy with the briefcase. What is the go to the very bottom? What's the least used emoji?
I think it's no bikes.
No bikes. No bikes. No,
What happened with the guy with the luggage? He was the least used. It's the blue guy holding the luggage.
Yeah.
But because he was the least used, a bunch of people said, we've got to use this emoji more.
Oh.
It's so sad this one is at the bottom of the list. So
and there's one emoji
that shot right up.
That's the strangest emoji ever, and I don't know if you've ever noticed it, but there's a guy in a coat. He's floating up into the air. The story is that comes from Wingdings.
Yeah, Webdings, actually.
Webdings.
Yeah. That was
Microsoft's font.
Yeah.
There he is,
It was the guy who made Comic Sans.
Right.
And he was on the task to make Webdings.
Okay.
And it was from an album of a cover that he liked. The Specials.
Okay. Yeah.
And he just thought, this would be fun to put in. But then little did he know that Unicode were going to put the Webdings characters into Unicode. And then... We also said, hey, you know what? They're kind of emoji-like. Let's give them emoji presentation.
Oh, good grief.
He's hopped all the way.
I think this should be your signature.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I've got no sympathy for him because he did actually create Comic Sans, for which I'd like to flame and insult. But, you know, it's just...
And he's wearing spats in that rendition.
Yeah.
That's another thing to emphasize. You mentioned that, but there is kind of a description, a text description of an emoji, and then it's up to... You Emoji Consortium provides one design, but it's up to companies. Twitter has a different emoji from Facebook, has a different emoji from Google, from Apple. So it's up to companies to make their emojis.
Yeah. So, I mean, what are the rules on things like, would there be a Trump emoji? Maybe next time you consider this? Individual people
Is a specific rule against living or dead people. There was nearly a Buddha a year ago when the synagogue was added, but then they went, actually, Buddha's kind of a lifelike person.
Yeah.
So... even though so Buddhism got represented by a wheel, there's a sort of wheel that's Buddhist.
Okay.
So, yeah, no real people, no Trump emoji.
And no Muhammad emoji as well.
No Muhammad emoji, that would have been a logical extension of any of that.
Yes, exactly.
No Jesus emoji. You can have a cross, no Jesus.
Okay.
Interesting.
Yeah, so no real people. It makes everyone's happy.
It's a good rule. Everyone's I can't help feeling.
Yeah. Well, Jeremy Burge, thanks for your service on the Emoji Committee. And you can find Jeremy. He's the founder of Emojipedia, which is a site we've used for years to figure out, what are they sending me? What does that mean? You'll find him there as the chief emoji officer. He's also at the Unicode Consortium. On the Emoji Committee, at Jeremy Burge on the Twitter. Do you use emojis in your tweets? You'd have to.
I do, not as much as people expect. But it does add a bit of flair. I like it. It takes the edge off if you give a blunt reply. If somebody says, is this from here? And you say, yes. It sounds very rude. Yeah. Put an emoji at the
end. Was there any... Oh, there you are with Jason Snell.
Yeah, there's Jason Snell. He said to say hello to everybody.
Is there any... When Apple decided to replace the gun with a squirt gun, was there any conversation over that at all?
See, because that's a vendor decision, Unicode,
it's
not, nothing, to,
nothing
do with
to do with it.
Yeah, okay. Unicode, as far as Unicode's concerned, it's called a pistol.
Yeah.
And Apple...
Could be a squirt pistol.
They could make it look what they want to. That's not a Unicode discussion. So that sort of came out of nowhere. And to
that's
be honest...
interesting.
I mean, Google has said they're not changing theirs. I spoke to Google the other day, and they said, not changing it. We think that it's misleading. But maybe if everybody already had a
Well, that's the
pistol,
risk.
Then
you
weigh it up.
Is this... a communication medium, if you have a pistol, a real pistol versus a squirt gun, let's say I send you a text, Ian, that says, you know, let's
get
have a pic. We're going to the
you.
Park. Bring your pistol. Right. I'm on Apple, so I think it's a squirt gun. You look at it. You're on Google. You're well,
I'm
okay, if you think
it's
so.
Great. I'm now on a DHS watch list. Great.
Yeah. Yeah. Revolver out.
Right. So you can see it, though. I mean, it's a communication medium.
Definitely.
I think Apple, whatever you think about it, they've done a disservice to complicate things for their users, whether you want it to be a real gun or not.
Apple do that? No, who'd have thought it? They're only selling 17 dongles now, for goodness sake.
I love it. I think emojis are great and they're a great conversation starter. So thank you, Jeremy.
Very
appreciate
welcome.
Your time. Thanks for coming back up here.
Great to be here.
We dragged him back up. He was here on Sunday. We made him come back. Hey, we're going to continue on in just a second. Coming up, a call for help and our review of the PlayStation Pro. I'm very excited about this. I'm trying to decide whether I should buy one. Brian Burnett will let me know. But first, a word about Blue Apron. You come to the end of the day. You worked hard, 9 to 5. And then you get the text or the call. Hey, what's for dinner? And then you think, not only do I have to plan what's for dinner, I got to go shopping for what's for dinner. I'm going to get home at 6 o'clock. Now I have to cook dinner. That's why Blue Apron is so great. It solves this. You get home, you don't have to wonder what's for dinner, because on your porch, on your step, is the Blue Apron box, refrigerated with the freshest vegetables, meats, and just the right amount for three different meals. And you get a recipe card that describes exactly how to make it. They've even got videos on the website that'll give you, you know, tips. It turns you into a great cook. In fact, I love Blue Apron's mission statement: to make incredible home cooking accessible to everyone while supporting a more sustainable food system, setting the highest standards for ingredients, and building a community of home chefs. Now, they've got two different plans. There's the plans for a couple. Now, that could be also for a single, by the way, because then you get two meals out of it, which I think is great. And they have a family plan with a little bit more kid-friendly ingredients. I got to tell you, cooking with a family, there's something magic about that. The house fills with wonderful smells. Your kids are helping you. They're learning a life skill that, well, frankly, will change their life. Get them off the screens and get them cooking with Blue Apron. Actually, the research shows Blue Apron families cook together three times more often. You can go to the Blue Apron site, pick the menu you want. They don't repeat more than once a year. So every recipe is going to be new and different for you. You're going to be cooking things you probably never heard of, using ingredients you may not know. But that's what's fun about it. These are delicious meals. You pick what you want, and you're just going to have so much fun. And then you're going to know how to do it next time. I have to say, I love Blue Apron. They deliver to 99% of the continental United States. We've arranged for your first three meals free and free shipping if you go to blueapron.com/twit. blueapron.com/twit. Pan-seared chicken with roasted fall vegetables and butter capers sauce. It just sounds good, doesn't it? Butter capers. How do you make that? You'll know. And then you can have butter caper sauce on everything from now on.
Yeah, but I think it's a really good thing about cooking with your families, because you can learn an awful lot. And
so
the amount
great.
Of processed rubbish which people get fed
well,
makes more sense to
that's what happens. You know, get to the end of the day, I understand why you end up at, you know, Apple box or whatever, the you know, the Jack in the Box or the, because you're starving. You don't want, it's the last thing you want to do is go home and shop and all that. BlueApron.com/twid. You're going to love it. I'm starving. I hate doing those ads. They make me hungry. We have a box at home, right? I'm ready. All right. Call for help coming up in just a second. But first, the 4K PS4 Pro is here. We had one about, we got it about a week ago. We were embargoed. We couldn't tell anybody. But going to be very interesting. The first 4K PlayStation 4. Brian Burnett has a look. Brian?
This is Brian Burnett, host of Know How, and I'm here to show you the latest and greatest in console technology for 2016. The PS4 Pro is a sleek, slanted, and svelte machine capable of pumping out 4K HDR content for the price of $399. The question remains, though, is having the cutting edge of the console wars machinery worth the money? Starting with the hardware, the PS4 Pro upgrades include a 2.1 GHz processor versus the old PS4 1.6 GHz processor, 8 GB of GDDR5 RAM, and 1 GB of DDR3. Also, the 1 TB internal drive is still removable and replaceable. Although in a not very pro move, Sony omitted on having a 4K-capable Blu-ray player, but the Pro is capable of streaming 4K from apps like Netflix, which might make this a moot point for some customers. Those of you like me who still cling dearly to your 1080p flat screen will notice a slight boost in sharpness and detail with the PS4 Pro, but to truly take advantage of what the PS4 Pro has to offer, you're going to have to back it up with a 4K TV. And if you want HDR, you'll have to buy one that supports the HDR10 standard. Also necessary is an HDMI 2.0 cable, and if you try using HDMI 1.4, you'll be locked at 30 frames per second on higher resolutions. If you do have the right setup or plan on upgrading to one soon, you'll be presented with smooth frame rates, high-res textures, and anti-aliasing that improves even older games like the remastered Last of Us. The list of games capable of taking advantage of the Pro is up to 40, and will soon have patches available for download to take full advantage of the PS4 Pro. When trying the Pro with the PSVR, there was a noticeable sharpness to the lines and less blurriness. And with the extra horsepower of the Pro, it makes text easier to read and enemies in the distance easier to pick out. The PSVR is 1080p screens inches away from your face, so the occasional pixel will still be seen when trying to focus. But how does the PS4 stack up, and is it worth it for you? Well, of course, it depends on your situation. If you've been holding off on getting a PlayStation 4 and you plan on getting or have a 4K TV, then definitely go for the Pro. It's a serious amount of horsepower for the amount of money. But if you're already a PS4 owner, it's harder to justify the difference, unless you absolutely must have the best graphics living room console currently out to date. If you have the patience, it might also be worth waiting and seeing what Microsoft has to offer in the near future. But in the end, whatever choice you end up making, you'll still be a happy gamer. That's my review of the PS4 Pro. Thanks for watching.
So that's why I bought the Microsoft Xbox One S, because it had the Blu-ray UHD player in it.
Right.
So I can watch the... So here's what happens. You get a 4K TV, and then your life is over. Because now you have to upgrade every single thing down the line. I mean, you have to get the 4K AV receiver. You got to get I just got the 4K Chromecast Ultra, the 4K Roku, the 4K TiVo Bolt Plus. You got to get the 4K Android NVIDIA Shield. You got to get... And the only thing I couldn't upgrade was the Apple TV. That's 1080p stuck. Yeah. But I do love 4K. I don't have a PlayStation yet.
I'm tempted. I know what you're going to be getting.
I'm tempted. Yeah. I'm tempted.
I mean, I've got to say, they design them pretty as well.
Isn't that nice?
That's a really nice design.
Yeah, that's a good look.
But yeah, I don't know. It's. I think if you haven't got one, then it's the logical choice.
Yeah. I don't know if I have room in my rack anymore. It's full. Everything. And by the way, everything can get Netflix. Everything. I have Netflix on 9 different devices now.
Crazy.
I only have one TV. I can't watch it on everything. But it is noticeable when you, especially with a 4K TV and a good 4K input and a lot of bandwidth, it really is noticeable improvement. So
certainly, looking at those images side by side, I mean, it was kind of like on one level somebody had Vaseline the camera, and on the other one it hadn't. So, you know, it's...
You kind of get used to it when you see that. Thank you, Brian Burnett. Yeah, there's my full cabinet. See, there's the Xbox, the Apple TV, the Roku, the Shield, and the TiVo Bolt. I don't know where I'm going to...
You do love your tech, Leo. I'll give you that.
That's my man cave setup. Uh-huh. That's the man cave. And yes. That's the little room I live in with just me and my dog. It's time for a call for help.
Indeed.
Let's do it.
We've got some answers for him as well.
Let's go to Providence, Kentucky. Hey, Ethan.
Hey.
Okay, hey, Ethan, I understand you're going to ask me about all those icons on your Windows desktop.
Good Lord.
That's ridiculous, oh. Ethan. Come on. Don't you have a file system?
I have a lot of stuff, so.
You're one of, I love how you've arranged it around desktop the logo. Wallpaper.
That's smart.
Yeah.
Looks like you've got one of those Republic of Gaming machines. How do you like it?
Yeah, it's fantastic. Very fantastic.
It's a Asus laptop that's designed, the ROG, yes. All the Asus ROG stuff is designed for gaming, right?
Yeah.
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 What's your game?
All these.
Not every one of those icons is a game.
No.
Are you at the University of Kentucky?
Nah, I'm 16. I'm at high school. So.
You have somewhere to aim. Okay. Ryan Shroud, of course, is a huge UK fan, and you've got a great basketball team. So what can we do for you?
All right. So I have some weird issue with my laptop. I don't know how it happened. It started happening a few weeks ago. It's very weird. Every day when I go to bed, I hibernate my computer so I can quickly go back to what I'm doing. Say if I'm making videos or doing other stuff, I just hibernate my computer.
Right.
When I have my computer on the charger, however, I just go to sleep or whatever. The next day I wake up, it's on.
Oh.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Can you tell if it's been on for a while?
No. I mean,
it in hibernation.
Yeah.
And you don't close the lid. Down. You're actually just saying hibernate.
I close the lid.
Right.
Yeah.
It hibernates. So let me talk about sleep versus hibernation first. I know you know this, Ethan, but just so people understand. Sleep is a low power mode.
Yeah.
You continue to refresh the RAM. Actually, maybe you don't even refresh the RAM, but you don't have to turn the machine on and get boot from scratch. You can get back to work fairly quickly. Hibernation takes the entire contents of RAM, whether it's 16 gigabytes, 32, 64, whatever, and saves a file of that size on your hard drive with all the RAM contents. So unlike sleep, they don't have to refresh RAM. Mm-hmm. Hibernate is effectively completely off, right?
Yeah.
But it saved the contents of memory so that when you come out of hibernation, it can load that 16 gigs back into RAM, and you're exactly, the windows are where you left them, the programs are where you left them, and I gather that you like to get right back to gaming, right? Because you don't want to do homework. Get right back into gaming.
I never get homework, so.
No homework. You must be a senior. So,
no, I'm a junior.
Junior, all right. So I understand why you do that. Generally, I have to say hibernation on most PCs is a very iffy thing. You have to have exactly the right hardware software combination. Windows has to understand how to do it on your laptop. The thing that you're dealing with though is the wake up. That's kind of interesting.
I got one quick question.
Yeah,
Are you running Windows 10?
Of course I am.
Yeah. Okay. There have been issues with Windows 10 and hibernation, so it may be that your BIOS settings have been slightly buggered about with, for want of a better phrase.
Had another computer before I got this one. I always set it in hibernation, and it never happened.
Right. So there's a lot of things that can wake a computer up. So first thing I would do is go into BIOS. It's not really BIOS anymore. It's UEFI. But go into the setup. We call it BIOS setup, but you know what I'm talking about. Mm. And make sure you don't have something like wake on LAN turned on.
Yeah, or check the advanced power mode settings.
Yeah, I mean, wake on LAN is used in a corporate network so that if I'm going to update your computer down the hall, I'm the IT guy, I don't have to get up, walk down the hall, wake up your computer and update it. I can just send it a little ping over the network. It'll wake up and then I can update it. So wake on LAN I would absolutely turn off. There may be a setting, for instance, maybe your email program. The thing is, if you're hibernating, the email program's not running.
No.
This is very interesting. All right, here we go. Don't close the lid. Somebody's saying, and this could be, and you might find this in your settings.
Oh, because that.
I don't have it set to where I close the lid.
Sleep on close? Okay.
No, right. I don't have it set
there. But you may have it set to sleep on close. So if I close this laptop, it puts it to sleep. That's a setting, often in BIOS, can be also in Windows Power Management. And now, so if you, it might, believe it or not, that would be weird. It would say, oh, well, I'm not, first of all, I'm not awake. So let me unhibernate and then go to sleep. That would be crazy.
Well, that doesn't happen.
All right.
That doesn't happen.
You made sure that that's not going on.
Padre has sent something in.
Father Robert says.
No more jokes about the Pope, by the way.
Is that the timer link?
Timer operations.
Yeah. Well, do you have some timers set on your machine? Father Robert is saying if you have a timer, it could be waking it up. Definitely launch the scheduler and make sure that there are no schedules. The other problem is Windows updates a lot.
Yeah.
And Windows Update might wake you up from hibernation as well. Here's what I would do. Are you on Wi-Fi or Ethernet?
It's a mixture of both. Sometimes I'm on Wi-Fi, sometimes I'm on Ethernet.
If you're on Ethernet, I would say disconnect the Ethernet and see if that fixes it. Then it could be wake on LAN or a Windows Update being pushed to you.
It doesn't.
Shut down the router and see. So none of that changed it.
No. Nah.
Padre says there may be some system timers that are there. We'll put a link to the in the show notes to that page that Father Robert sent us. He says sometimes there are system timers set that may also be waking you up. That doesn't make a lot of sense because why would they give you a hibernate function if they would also have something built in that's going to wake it up at random times?
Yeah, it's really weird. And when I unplug my charger here, I unplug my charger. Mm-hmm. For some reason, it doesn't wake by itself.
Oh, wow.
It doesn't.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Oh, my and God. Then, now I'm really. Oh, now I'm baffled. Well,
no, and then the next time I plug it in, it turns on.
What?
Wouldn't that just be that maybe there's a function running within the hibernate mode, which is.
Let me logically understand this. So, if you have unplugged it, it hibernates normally.
Yes, it doesn't turn on. It doesn't turn on by itself.
That's really weird.
But if it's plugged in, you hibernate, shut the lid, go to bed. In the morning, it'll be awake.
Yeah.
Unplugged, no.
Unplugged, no. But like, if it's like off, it's like hibernating, I plug it back in, it turns on.
That's bizarre.
Why.
So Father Robert says, right-click the battery icon, go into advanced properties, go into sleep, then disable allow wake timers. I would certainly start with that. Because that's a timer to wake something up. And apparently there are system timers to do system, tasks.
Yeah.
Does this happen every single night?
Every night.
And this did this occur after you upgraded to Windows 10 or after you've been an issue since
this you had computer the always had Windows 10. When I first got this, it never had any issue.
Oh, this is new.
And then it's developed.
It's been happening for a couple months.
I'll check with Microsoft, see if they've got any.
There's
ideas.
A logical thing here that I'm trying to understand that I got to get. What is different when the battery is plugged in or the power is plugged in and not? When it's on battery, it doesn't do this. It actually hibernates properly. When it's not on battery, when it's on mains, I'm saying it in English style, so English. When it's on mains.
Don't patronize me,
it does not hibernate properly. Only hibernates properly on battery.
That suggests that there's something going on. Yeah, it could well be a timer issue in that sense, because if you take the actual charger out, then the computer depowers to its maximum extent to save life. But
so let me ask you something.
Yeah.
Did this start happening sometime in August?
Probably.
Yeah. Sometime in early August? Right about after the anniversary update to Windows?
Oh, no.
Yep.
I freaking hate the anniversary update.
You mean
it has broken so much stuff.
Interesting.
So it's definitely, it sounds, I mean, look, we've seen all sorts of weird behavior from the anniversary update, from webcams not working. It screwed up my ultimate gaming machine. It blew screen every time I did VR. I mean, the anniversary update. Anniversary update, why I oughta. But I don't know. So. We've given you a couple of things you should look at. Go in the power manager. There's some different setting for battery and power. And I have to say, This sounds like maybe Father Robert's wake timers. You could find those in there. I'm just, you know, there's something going on that when it's on power, it does not hibernate, but it does hibernate when it's on battery. That kind of makes sense because actually that's when you want to use the least amount of power. I bet you it's in a power management setting somewhere. And it could very well be that the anniversary update decided on your behalf that the best thing to do was not allow hibernation when you're plugged in or something like that. The other thing is make sure it's fully hibernated. You know, hibernation takes a little while because it has to save out how much RAM? You got a ton of RAM, right?
Yeah, 16 gigs.
So that it has to save out a 16-gig file. So make sure that all the, you know, watch the activity, the disk activity, like make sure that's all done before you close the lid. Okay? Don't just go hibernate and close the lid because what that'll do is cancel hibernate, put it in sleep mode. So that's another – I hate hibernate, but I understand why you want to use it.
Well, I think I remember probably a few weeks ago I was trying to see. I did keep the lid open. Mm-hmm. And it's still doing it. And it didn't. It doesn't matter if I close the lid or open the lid.
Okay.
It's weird. Real like that.
Well, we got a couple of things. The fat vegan chef. Don't worry about his name. It's just a handle. The fat vegan chef in the chat room says, look at the event viewer to see and look at times in the event viewer. And there's also, if you go to Microsoft's system internals page, there's some really great event explorers and process explorer that are, I think everybody should have. Certainly anybody that's as geeky as you and sophisticated as you, Ethan, should have, that lets you see all the processes, lets you see the logs, because you're going to be looking for an event.
Yeah.
You know, if you hibernate, there should be no events from the point you hibernated till the time it came back on. That log should tell you what woke it up. That's going to be your kind of your clue, your record there. Look at the log, the console log, the event log, the process viewer, and see, you know, I shut it down. I hibernated at 9 p.m. And there's that log should be empty. There should be no activity. Sleeping's different, but hibernation, no activity until it woke up, and that'll tell you that time and what the event was will tell you what's waking it up.
All right.
Okay, best of luck.
Hey, that's fun. And so what are you studying in school?
Algebra 2, Spanish.
You want to do computer science when you go to college? What are you
plan? I want to be like a video game developer. I want to be an animator. And
nice. Are you doing a little bit of that now?
Well, at least I'm trying to, but not at school.
Well, you know what? I always tell my son, playing games is a prerequisite to almost any kind of job in the modern future. So play all those games all you can. That's going to help you in the future.
Hey, true. You
don't listen to your parents.
Nice to talk to you. Now we're going to get angry. No,
take care, Ethan.
Oh, good gaming, mate.
All right, see you.
Great to talk to you. Hey, next time we're going to have Nathan Olivares-Giles on the show. You know, Wall Street Journal. Great guy.
Indeed.
And he's going to be our host. If you have a question for me or Nate, here's how you ask.
Need tech help? The new screensavers are here with answers. Email your tech questions to newscreensavers@twit.tv.
By the way, there's a Lifehacker article, How to Find Out What Woke Up Your Computer Last. I love that. Thank you for finding that, PC guy. So, you know, that probably involves going to the system event viewer and looking at the event log and seeing what the first event was after you went to sleep. That should give you some information. That's a category of problem, though. I get a lot of those calls on the radio show. We get them here, where it's like, I don't know. And since we don't have access to the hardware,
through. We've got the readers on the chat board.
Yeah,
so,
we're pretty good.
It works.
It's like asking your buddy, and then we don't know the answer because we can't put our hands on the computer. But we can give you some places to look. I think that's pretty good. You know, the other, I don't know if this happened during the show. I think it happened during the radio show. My phone went ding, 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 ding. You know what that means? Ding, ding, ding. Somebody's at my front door.
I've heard that.
There's motion at my front door. That's because I got the Ring Video doorbell. I love this. This is a doorbell. I replaced my existing doorbell. I can actually see who it was. I replaced my existing doorbell with a Ring Video doorbell. Now, when somebody comes and goes, it's just Sarah. She's probably dropping off some groceries or something. So when somebody comes and goes, I know, because it's got a motion detector, when they ring the doorbell, I can actually talk to them and they can hear me. Because this doorbell, which replaced my regular, you know, boring old, you press the button, it rings a chime doorbell, is like a computer in here. here. It's got a high-def video camera, wide-angle. You see the wide-angle view, sees the whole porch there. It's got motion sensors, and I have it sent so that I don't want, when people go by on the street there, I don't want it to go off. So I just have it when people get to this port, and you can totally control that. And then you also have a speaker and a microphone, so you can talk to them. When packages come, I can say, hey, you know, that's my package. Just leave it there. In fact, sometimes I'll say, oh, I'm here. I'm in the bathtub. Just leave it. I'll sign for it tomorrow. That works sometimes, you know. I can't believe it. So you can talk to them when they ring your doorbell. If there's a bad guy lurking around, you can say, hey, you, what are you doing on my front porch? If the kids, you probably don't know about this because you're from England. I'm sure they never did it. But in the United States, kids will come up, they'll ring a doorbell and run away. Can you believe that?
Why?
What? It's called a, what is it called? Ding dong dish. Kara, for some reason, knows. Exactly what that is.
Interesting.
The ding dong ditch.
Very interesting.
So if you've got a ding dong ditcher in your neighborhood, you know what? You're going to know exactly who ding donged and ditched because you're going to have crystal clear HD video of this. We also have the Ring doorbell. Also, the folks at Ring are, you know, they got a big investment for Richard Branson, like $28 million. Yeah. So they have really been beefing up their line. They now have the stick-up cam, which is essentially a Ring doorbell without the doorbell. Just the camera, the microphone, the speaker. You can put it anywhere. It has a little solar panel. You don't even need to have power. So it's wireless. And the solar panel charges it the day, and then it runs on battery at night. It's got a great infrared camera, so you can see what's going on at night. And you can talk to people. Like, if they're in your backyard, you can say, hey, dog, get out of there. And then it scares the hell out of it. It's so fun. Anyway, ring.com/... If you want to get this, ring.com/NSS for the new screensavers. Take a look at the Ring of Security kits, $50, $100, even $150 off the kit. You can get the Ring doorbell, the new one, or the new one doesn't have the battery in it, so it's a little slimmer. It's got an HD 1080p camera instead of 720p. I have the battery one because, you know, that's nice. You can put it anywhere. All of them come with that great solar-powered security sign, so you let the bad guys know. It charges in the day, and it lights up at night, and you let the bad guys know, hey, no, I got this covered, man. I'm watching. I love this. Ring.com/NSS. Up to $150 off a Ring of Security kit right now when you visit ring.com/NSS.
I think if I took that to the hardware hacking zone at DEF CON, somebody could rig a laser cannon up of it.
Ooh, a laser cannon!
You're going to press my doorbell and run away, are you?
Ding dong, ditch this! How did you know that? How did you know that, Kara?
I just remember.
A misspent youth.
Yeah.
I remember.
Of course you didn't.
Of course you didn't.
Kids. Anthony.
Anthony, you did it? Anthony, do you have a faux hawk?
A little bit.
Is that... Oops. Halloween's over, dude. What is... Did you get a mohawk? It's a faux hawk. Very cute. I like that.
That's what I wanted to hear.
Meow. Good one.
Coming up next, I just noticed, is the mailbag. But first, here's Megan Maroney with five hidden features you might have missed in iOS 10 Watch.
The iPhone and iPad's newest operating system is a little less than intuitive. Here are five quick iOS 10 tips that you might have missed. One, this one's designed for those of us who are experts at forgetting where we've parked our car. Do not call us forgetful. We just have more important things on our minds. If you have Apple's CarPlay system or if you pair your iOS device via Bluetooth, just open Maps, tap on Parked Car, and you'll get directions. It will also give you directions to your home. And if you've forgotten where that is, then I think we can call you forgetful. Two, you love sending images via iMessage, but you're on a limited data plan. To save yourself and your message recipient some bytes, go to Settings, Messages, and scroll down to Enable Low-Quality Image Mode. Three, did you know you can reply directly to messages from your notifications? If your device has 3D Touch, just do a hard press and then respond. If your device does not have 3D Touch, just do a long press to open the program and the message or email. Four, you probably know that the app Find My iPhone will help you find your phone or your iPad. New with iOS 10, it will also help you find your Apple Watch. If you have an Apple Watch paired with your iPhone, you don't have to do anything. It will automatically add itself to the Find My iPhone app. Note to people trying to disappear, you might want to leave your phone and your watch behind so people can't stalk you. Number five, Apple showed this next tip off when they previewed iOS 10, but it's a bit hidden. First, type your message. Then long tap on the globe icon to bring up the list of installed keyboards. And then choose emoji. The words that can be emojified will turn red. Tap them to emojify them. If there's more than one choice, messages will give you all of your options. I am Megan Maroney. I host iOS Today every Monday and Tech News Today every Monday through Friday.
Thank you, Megan Maroney. She's, of course, the host of iOS Today, so she knows all about this, along with Tech News
Today. And fastest fingers in the West as well.
She's apparently very quick. I haven't seen her do it. So, and loves the emojis. But what's weird is that she knows...
No one's perfect.
She knows features in Apple's messages. Like, I know they mentioned that. I had no idea how to do the emojify. They've put features in there that are not... You have to know somebody to find them. I think that's kind of the idea, right? I feel like that. Anyway... you ready for the mailbag?
Always.
You don't have to use those because we've got actual mail. Here in the mailbag.
Speaking of mail, did you hear the guy who did the voice for You've Got Mail is now an Uber driver?
Durwood? He's an Uber driver,
yeah.
I feel bad. Maybe he wants to do that just because he wants to meet people.
Could be.
You've got car. Yes. So I actually, he for a while had a website where he would let you buy You've Got Mail.
Oh.
So I had him record You've Got Mail, you twit.
It's like, who was the guy who used to do the movie promos with In a World?
Yeah.
Ernie. Occasionally, people would ask him, could you record my answer phone message? And he'd do it.
In a world where Ian Thompson is not at home, please leave a message. Here is, I'm just checking these to make sure that they contain no profanities or emojis. Here are two messages. If you select one, you will get to answer that question. There you go. Question numero uno comes from Jeff. Hi, I'm a huge fan of the network. Does Google have any... this is good. This is for you, Ian.
Mm-hmm.
Does Google have any responsibility... I'm going to read it like he would.
Yeah.
Does Google have any responsibility for correcting social biases, particularly if those biases become self-reinforcing via repeatedly showing up in search results? Looking forward to seeing your perspective, Jeff. Now, does he mean the filter bubble?
I think this relates really to this. Yeah, you know, it's like Google wants to show you information which it thinks you will want to see.
Well, that's what a search engine should do, right? A search engine...
Up to a point.
If it's going to be effective, you type in a term, and the search engine is shooting for finding the exact page you're looking for as the first result, right?
Yeah.
What Google does is it conditions those responses on things it already knows about you. If you're logged in... If you use an incognito page or you log out of Google, it won't have the same results.
True.
Because it's trying to figure out what do you want.
Yeah, certainly. But there's an inherent danger in that. It's very good for when you're looking for something on the internet. But if you're actually using Google as part of your everyday life, it acts as a filter and it generally only puts you in contact with people or with concepts that it knows you're comfortable
with. That's the filter bubble.
So you never get challenged to think new things, to think on the other side of the box type stuff.
We've talked a lot about this on This Week in Google. Jeff Jarvis is of the... This was based on a book written by a guy named Eli Pariser called The Filter Bubble. And Pariser's thesis was, well, people are getting self-reinforced in their beliefs because they're only seeing stuff that agrees with their beliefs increasingly. And Jeff makes a point, and I think it's a very good point, that's... You know, you certainly does do that, but you also are seeing what's on the internet, and you're, as a result, getting a lot of inputs from a lot of dissenting points of view, no matter what. They're not perfect at the filter.
It's not perfect, but it's the kind of analogy I'm thinking of is when the Fairness Doctrine in the US was abandoned in the mid-80s. And that opened the door to a whole bunch of talk radio stuff and some very partisan stuff. And psychological experiments that have been done since then show that it alters the way people
believe. To get exposed to other people's points of view.
I mean, there's a famous study where they looked at somebody who'd just been listening to a particular bunch of radio stations. Right. When they're exposed to media from a different political perspective, it changed their political viewpoint.
Yeah.
They had been very hardcore on one side, and they became much more of a moderate and a sort of open thinker about these things.
When the presidential elections cycle began 500 days ago, on Facebook, I followed all the candidates, all the 17 Republican candidates, all the independents, all the two Democratic, actually, I think it was three or four Democratic candidates.
Yeah,
because I wanted to get as many points of view as possible. So I attempted to burst that bubble. And I think people, you know, I do think people are seeing a broad variety of information. But the difference between watching a television news show where you don't, television news is only very vaguely informed by what you are personally interested in.
Yeah.
It's taking as an aggregate what gets us good ratings, perhaps. But you don't influence television news so much. And I think it's more so, you're right, it's more so the case on Google searches that you are influencing the results. The question is how much, and are you seeing stuff that's not agreeing with you?
Yeah, I mean, I'm less concerned about Google doing this than I am about Facebook.
Yeah.
Because we've seen...
Facebook definitely does.
Yeah, Facebook constantly reinforces... I've got, you know, a couple of hundred friends on Facebook, and some of them I never hear from because Facebook has decided that...
That bugs me.
Yeah, I know.
Feels like... When you join Facebook, I joined Facebook to follow friends and family. I should see every one of their
posts.
Exactly.
And you can set up most recent posts.
That's what I do.
It will default again and again back to what Facebook thinks you should see.
Yeah.
Now, we're in agreement with this on Twitter.
By the way, the reason they do that is they have found they want to make you stay on Facebook as long as possible. So they modify the feed to keep you on Facebook, to make it sticky. So that's why. I mean, they don't have some nefarious purpose. They're not pushing an agenda.
But it's the unintended consequences of that philosophy when brought through. I mean,
but what would you propose? See, in both cases, Google and Facebook, they're trying to give you what you want. In fact, they are giving you what you want.
Yes, but at the same time, I would say... It's kind of like we're in agreement. We were talking about this months ago about Twitter. You know, we both like our Twitter to be a raw data feed, so you go on there and you see what events as they happen. I'd like the same sort of thing for Facebook. And with Google, it's tricky because search the whole thing. It's trying to find the kind of things that you'll be looking for. But the corollary of that, though, is if you're looking at something which would be completely new to you and Google has no experience of you even liking, then that might actually make it harder to do that.
Right.
And you might be better using an incognito mode.
I think the problem is that nowadays we're in a situation where there is basically one incumbent. There's no competition. In the days when you had Alta Vista, Google, Ask Jeeves, you had many search engines. Google,
Ask is still going amazingly enough.
Google won because they gave you the best search results. That was their competitive advantage, right?
Mm.
But you had a choice, and you would use whatever gave you the best search results. Now, you basically have one incumbent, Facebook, one incumbent, Google, for search, maybe Twitter as the social feed, and that's it. So... at this point, there's nobody keeping them honest.
No. I mean, this is the problem. There is no competition. It always used to be, there was social networks particularly, that they'd have this sort of slow burn, then quick ramp up, and then they'd burn out when the next one came along.
Right.
And because of the scale that Facebook has got itself to, that can't happen anymore.
It's won. It's over.
Or at least possibly can't happen. We don't know. Something else could come along and catch up people's imaginations. But if that happens, as we've seen with Instagram, Facebook will just buy them anyway. Right. So, you know.
Facebook's done a very good job of making their feed be sticky, be more interesting to you, and they're constantly modifying it. We know from research, most people don't know that Facebook is managing that feed. They think they're seeing a chronological feed. So one piece of advice is to go to your Facebook page, click the feed, and choose most recent.
Exactly.
Just to see.
Yeah.
Just to see. And I usually find most recent more satisfying for me.
Also, I mean, if you haven't heard from someone on Facebook or seen any posts about them on your feed...
They're not dead.
Go to their Facebook page and just like something they've posted. And then that clicks that back into your feed. And it's like, this looks like this person. Get some feeds from there.
You can also promote and demote friends on Facebook.
Yes.
You know, sometimes people think, well, it's binary. They're either a friend or not a friend. No, they can be a close friend, an acquaintance.
Mm-hmm.
You can see more of somebody's information and less of somebody's information. And all of that you can do by right-clicking or clicking on the person's name and seeing their relationship to you. So you can tune your feed. I think most people don't. I think Mark Zuckerberg knows that.
Yeah.
And so they try to generate something that you want to see without any intervention on your
No, feed. I know. And I think it's one of the reasons why people are getting so polarized.
Yeah.
Is that they're not getting that sort of depth of emotional and intellectual contact with people that don't agree with them. And I think that in the long term, that's very, very damaging indeed.
It is the larger question. We seem to be in a, not just in the U.S., but globally, in a very polarized situation. And maybe this is contributing to it.
I honestly think it is contributing to it. And it's not the only thing contributing to that polarization, but I just think it's done for the best of reasons, but right. the unintended consequences of what we're doing here are going to have knock-on effects throughout the generations.
So you're saying mix a little veg into your stew. It shouldn't be all meat.
Yeah.
Yeah. Question two.
I've never actually heard it like that. You've obviously tasted my cooking. Okay, so hi, new screensavers. I'm always doing Skype conference calls for work and need a high-quality camera. I presently have an older Mac with an EyeSight camera, and everyone always comments about how good the picture and sound is. But that computer isn't going to last forever, and I want the other participants to have a high-quality camera instead of the built-in camera on their laptops. Could you recommend a camera with a built-in microphone, if possible? Well, as a journalist and broadcaster to an extent, this kind of thing is way up my... You know, I've tried an awful lot of cameras over the years, and I think you've actually got me, because these are the cameras that I would actually recommend.
We borrowed your cameras here.
I do not get paid for this, but I have found that this Logitech in particular has been very, very good. I think that's the 920 or the 930. Yeah.
They've actually released a new one.
I was trying it out at their pre-show event, but I think I'm still covered by the NDA, so I can't.
I think it's... I don't know.
Is it out now?
Okay, I don't know. The Gizwiz, Dick DiBartolo, talked about it last week on the show, so I have a feeling it's okay to talk about it. But I would say, I would agree, the Apple EyeSight cameras are not the best cameras.
New.
I really like the Logitechs. They have built-in microphones, just as you asked for. Yeah. The quality is very good. What is the latest? It's the C922, the Pro.
930, isn't it?
The 930. Yeah, so just get, you know what, you can, you, any of these is fine. We love the 920. I think that's, which one is the 920 here of these two?
That's the
little
yeah.
one. We love this. We use this all the time. We get great imagery from it. Highly recommend it.
But he's totally right that, you know, the actual webcams built into a laptop screen are so pathetically bad that they're really just there for emergencies. And honestly, I'm with head FBI Chief Director Comey on this one. I tape over mine.
Yeah.
There are some things that the NSA doesn't need to see.
In the chat room, the Fat Vegan Chef likes the Tandberg. I like the Tandberg Precision HD.
Yeah.
Does it have a microphone or not? I don't know.
I've just had really bad experiences with the Tandberg kit. It tended to break after
it's
about
so funny.
A year to 18
mine
months.
Mine broke. So me too. It's got a great image.
Yeah.
But it broke very quickly.
Yeah, this is it.
I mean, Logitech's pretty robust.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not being paid for this, but yes, they are pretty good at that.
Yeah. The 922 Pro Stream is the new one, says Dick DiBartolo, who's watching. And that's the one he showed us a couple of weeks ago. So there's some really, I think Logitech's got some really good kit, as you would say.
Yes. As we say back in the home country.
That's our recommendation. And by the way, if you're going to do that on a Mac, Logitech comes with Windows software. Mm-hmm. But our tip that we use, and we do a fair bit of this too.
Indeed.
Is to get there's a paid program on the Mac App Store called Webcam Settings that works with the Logitech. And it's the only way on a Mac that you can do things like white balance and some really important settings, turn off the autofocus, things like that. So get Webcam Settings if you can do it on a Mac.
Got it.
There it is. Okay. Yep. And then what is it, $10? $8, not too expensive.
Not by Apple standards.
Always a thrill to have you on the show.
Always a pleasure.
I
look forward to it, because it's we can have a good, particularly the timing for this one show, because I was just like,
well, I felt like you probably wanted to talk.
I'm gonna be on, right? Okay, I can.
Did you vent enough? Did you get it?
It's helped a lot. It's been a week of venting, right down to, I mean. I probably shouldn't be saying that. Well, no. Basically, my next-door neighbours saw me running down the street topless at 1 o'clock in the morning, just like cursing and wailing. So
really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I was really rather...
You took it really seriously.
I was enormously pissed off.
Yeah. I'm older than you.
Yeah.
I've lived through a few elections, and I can remember elections where our guy lost.
Yeah.
And you survive. And, you know, one thing, I have some great confidence in the American Republic. We have a very good system for all its flaws, and I think this will continue on, and we'll be fine.
And if not...
Now, you guys in the UK, you're in deep trouble.
Well, I mean, no. if it doesn't work out, the Queen will be there for you, okay?
I know. I saw the show. I love her and her corgis, yeah. No, it's always great. We can find your emojified writing at theregister.co.uk.
Mm-hmm. The minute I cut my fingers off and have to rely on voice control.
No emojis. He writes in actual English prose. Anything else you want to plug?
No, we're tootling on quite merrily with the Register at the moment. We've just hired some new people, so
I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah,
because you guys do a great job, I think.
Well, I appreciate it, but yeah, it's we found American journalists who can do snark, which is actually very difficult to do. But you know, we've found some people.
That's what I like about the Register. It's got good, solid content, but always a little edge.
Well, we did the day after the election, we Trumpified all our headlines.
Oh, did
so
you?
It was best huge malware attack.
The best ever. I love it. A little hyperbole is good for you.
You need to have some fun with
good
these things.
Good for the soul. Thank you, Ian. We do this show every Saturday, about 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 2100 UTC. Every time I say this, people say, no, UTC never changes. No, I know it doesn't. We change because we follow the weird daylight savings time, winter time thing. So this show is always 3 p.m. Pacific, but that happens to change relative to UTC, and it has. We are now UTC minus 8, so 2100 UTC. If you want to tune in live, you can be in the chat room at irc.twit.tv. But, of course, you don't have to watch anything we do live. You can always watch it on demand at your convenience in whatever time zone you prefer if you go to twit.tv, our website, or subscribe on any of the big podcast clients or even small ones. Just look for the new Screensavers. Don't forget, we have about a week left, right, for our Twitmas Ugly Twitmas shirts. They want me to plug the newsletter. Don't forget to subscribe at twit.tv/NSS. And if you want to get one of our ugly shirts, we're pulling them right now. Is that hideous or what? It says,
oh my word.
It says Merry Twitmas. And they're not really sweaters. I think it's a sweatshirt. We call it a sweater. But we also have tank tops, which is really confusing, T-shirts. And we sell them pretty much at cost. Only 10 days left, though. So please, do it at Teespring. Only 52 sold. Jerry, I think we might have been mistaken on this whole ugly thing. Quickly, get there. Hie thee to TEESPRING, Teespring.com/Twitmas. Maybe that's the problem, is people are just going to /twit. We can do both. And pick up you'll be proud to wear that at family gatherings.
When did I'm baffled by this. This idea that it's Christmas is here, we're celebrating the birth and the birth of baby Jesus. Let's get a really ugly sweater and put it on. How did this start?
I don't know, but it's a great holiday tradition, don't you think?
Oh, it's hilarious. I mean, I've seen some eye-bleedingly bad jumpers just showing out there. Just like,
I like the one with Will Smith on it. I don't really understand it, but...
Oh, my word.
I think that's
now,
Ken
I'm
Bone.
Sorry,
is that Ken Bone? Anyway.
I'm sorry, if I saw somebody wearing that down the street...
No, but see, if somebody
police.
Wears the Merry Twitmas shirt, you would be very happy you saw that coming in your way.
Yeah,
Merry Twitmas.
Well, now, you see, I'm kind of thinking, well, maybe I should join in, but it goes against the grain somewhat.
You need an elderly aunt in the Midwest to make you one. You can't just go out and buy them.
Actually, well, my sister doesn't... I don't think my sister's listening at the moment, but she did once for Christmas make me a... Well, so she's just started to learn how to knit, and she did a grey wool jumper with a black spider's web motif over the thing and a little spider which sat just there on your shoulder. And I'm afraid to say when Mum put it in the wash and it shrunk, I was just like, damn, never get to wear that again.
Oh, shucks.
Into the charity
now,
box.
Now, I just want to point out, you're going to see some of these people wearing vests as well as this sweater. Now, that's really an advanced technique. I would hold off.
Vest is American for sleeveless jumper, right?
Oh, God, I don't understand your language at all.
We gave it to you, so for goodness sake.
Sleeveless jumper? No, it's a waistcoat.
Oh, okay, a waistcoat.
Yeah.
Right, fine.
Sleeveless jumper, my ass. All right, that's enough of that.
There's a mental image.
Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time on the new Screensavers. Bye-bye, everybody. Westcoat. That's what